With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Compliment Tunnel. It is episode 7 of Previously on Boardroom. I'm Jamie East, and we are dissecting, deliberating, and discussing the tragic events of season 3, episode 7 of Succession. Joining me, wearing his complimentary cashmere sweater, is Chris Mandel. How are you, Chris?
I'm good, yeah. I've got 15 maybes for my birthday party next month, so I'm feeling great.
And on the other side, much like Jerry, she's been completely missing for the past couple of weeks, but she's like a human VPN. It's Grace Dent. How are you?
I'm back, baby. I'm back. I tell you what I am. I'm heavily traumatized by that entire episode.
Oh, my God.
I'm one of those people who... I don't throw a lot of parties. And when it comes to my birthday, I would rather just go missing a little bit and just hope that nobody notices. Not only does it keep me feeling younger, but I don't have that nervousness of who's going to turn up. The feeling that people are obligated to come to your party is something that makes me really anxious. And this, I mean, the first half of this episode was just that, wasn't it? You know, Kendall determined to have this massive party, despite the fact that the entire episode has shown that he has no friends.
You know, we've kind of like been calling Kendall a bit player for the past few weeks. We've been saying that, you know, he's just dropped in here and there. And now it's kind of clear why, because this was Jeremy Strong and Kendall Roy at their absolute best. It was horrific to watch. Chris, what was your immediate takeaway from it?
Yeah, well, when I found out that the 7th episode of the season was going to focus on Kendall having a 40th birthday party, I began to get stressed then. And yeah, I spent most of the episode thinking this is just going to boil over, or something is going to just go horribly wrong. And instead of it being like a big, like impactful moment, it was just a slow, corrosive like episode where it just got grotesque. And
Chris, you're absolutely right. Didn't we all sit thinking the climax will be when he gets up and does his song, or the climax will be something to do with meeting that absolute piece of work, Lucas Mattson, or there were so many things that we thought we were heading to, but what we actually did was head to collectively as an audience just wanting to lie in a fetal position with that was it an A-team blanket he had around him? I think I saw Mr. T on it. Am I right?
Yeah, it's A-team. It was and Damon Lindelof has tweeted. If you go on to Damon Lindelof, the excellent writer of Watchmen, he found his A-team blanket. He had exactly that in his loft. He went and found it out. And if you're listening to this, we're recording this Monday night at 6:25 in the evening. There is one on eBay now for $50 that with shipping costs comes to about 100 quid. I think you can get it in England next week for 100 quid. I'm quite tempted.
Yeah. Is it new?
And it might be the same one. I mean,
if it's used, it's been around for a long time as somebody's comforter.
40
and
years.
I'm going to say no.
If you pay them like £105, they'll give it a quick spritz of Febreze before putting it in a jiffy bag.
Before we move on to the birthday party, typical of Succession, where, you know, we've spent four or five episodes musing over what on earth the Department of Justice is going to do with this court case, and is Tom going to jail, and is this going to happen, is that going to happen, what does this mean corporately, structurally, morally, all the rest of it, and then within 15 to 20 seconds, oh yeah, don't worry about that, that's forgotten about, we're moving on. Do you believe that?
Well, on one level, it does seem almost too good to be true. And when Tom began celebrating so quickly and so, you know, so over in such an over-the-top manner, flipping tables and screaming, obviously you think there may be some comeuppance. However, I did think that linked back to Tom was that last episode where he just looked Kendall in the eye and he said, I've never seen Logan get fucked.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah. it was such an amazing, like, especially the way that Tom delivered it as well. You know, with his kind of really wide, almost weeping eyes and his little wobbly lip.
Yeah.
Because he said exactly what we all knew. You know, and this is what we saw in this episode. It was very much, yeah, you know, we've had episode after episode of this huge trauma, but it's all gone away now. Logan made it go away.
It seems to have been a vehicle for Tom. The whole thing seems to have been a vehicle for Tom's character arc throughout season three, which is he's grown some balls, he's grown a backbone, he's kind of come through this. And I felt really happy for him. Then I felt really sad for him because no one else was really happy. And then it became clear, yeah, as Roman pointed out, that like Shiv was just kind of wanting him to fuck off to prison so she could go and have sex with a load of people. But then towards the end of the episode in the car on the way home from the party, he was just like, he kind of knew that, I think, and was just like, I'm going out. It's going to be a long one. Don't wait up, which was kind of what she was doing to him for ages. So maybe that's what it is. And also there was the moment that Logan, you know, very quickly turned to him when everyone else had kind of ignored him and kind of put him down as a bit player in the whole thing. Logan was the one who touched him on the arm and said, I will remember.
You know, which is an enormous it's an enormous coup. It's an enormous accomplishment.
He tented immediately, didn't he?
Yeah. It's like when he got to call Logan. Did he call him Pops?
Pops, yeah. In the toilet.
This is an enormous. I always think with Tom that in the same way as I had Adamant or Simon Le Bon on my wall, and I dreamed of one day being amongst those people, having a great time. He had that family, didn't he? That's where he wanted to be. He read the business magazines and he wanted to be amongst the Roys. And yeah, he is there, but he's not. Is he living the pop star lifestyle that he thought he was going to be, or the fantasy life?
Yeah.
I feel that the slow brooding storyline of Shiv and Tom's marriage, I think it is actually very subtly done. It's a huge thing, isn't it? That because of the drama that's been going on, they are not having serious conversations and it's a convenient thing to hide behind. Mm. But their marriage is toast.
Yeah, well, the marriage is toast. Shiv's relationship with everyone seems to be toast. So, you know, yes, we've kind of come to it where actually there is seriously now more chance of Tom running Waystar than Shiv, which is crazy.
I think she's now dragging his prospects down, whereas prior he was the sort of wet husband that she had that was kind of like ruining her image. And now I think, especially now that Logan sort of backs him, I think he will divorce Shiv.
Yeah.
And I think he will do well at the company going into like next season. Absolutely. Like,
so you think we're going to season four with them separated and divorced, but Tom still playing a huge part.
Tom's daddy's favorite. Like I think Shiv is going to get completely, she's like just had such a bad year. I think she's spiraling I know we're kind of going out of order, but that dancing she was doing, like, it's awful.
I thought she was walking over there to sleep with the guy that she'd spotted. I thought that was
She was going to, yeah. But she, yeah, I think for someone that self-aware to dance that badly, like, she is in a really bad place.
It was interesting for me, seeing the unraveling of all the children. I mean, maybe we always talk about this as the unraveling, but to me, this was real kind of Red Wedding, Game of Thrones style.
Good analogy, yeah.
Like, you know, unraveling. with Shiv, you can, you know, we'll talk about them all, but with Shiv, for me, it's been very interesting to see. We've all been kind of trained to think that Shiv deep down is a bit, you know, she's a bit of a lefty. She's a bit of, you know, she has ethics and she has morals, and we've seen all of those be stripped away from her in just because in a will to please daddy. And I thought it was so interesting in this episode when we get to meet. So we're trying to turn. So Shiv is desperately trying to turn away from the bad old days, the bad old days of the Roys. We're going to move away from this and we're going to pin our colours to Lucas Mattson, who is awful. If the next three episodes, how many episodes have we got left? Three? Two?
We've got two
three.
More. Two more.
If the next two episodes are just watching Lucas Mattson be fired in a cannon into the sun, right? I'm happy. Because doesn't he just, he sums up to me everything that is bad about where we're going. You know, yeah. We're meant to be in this kind of, oh, you know, the Me Too movement and fairness and diversity and people being kind and all these lovely things we talk about. And then you've got Lucas and he's their lifeboat, apparently. So I found it very interesting, this idea that Shiv, it's no respect from her family, no respect. Oh, we haven't even talked about Roman, but like no respect from Roman. The things that Roman said in that episode, I thought it was interesting that I love Roman. I love him, love him, love him.
Did he, you still love favorite. Him as much at the end of this one?
Exactly. Whereas people say, oh, Tom brings the comedy, Greg brings the comedy. I'm like, to me, Roman is the comedy, and yeah. I did not find him funny in this episode.
No, there was a lot of it. It was just really upsetting to watch.
Awful. Just awful. You know, so moving, you know, so, you know, going back to Shiv, because we should break them down and what they all did in this episode, but going yeah. back to Shiv, you know, the thing, she's got no respect from her father. And now, you know, Roman, in trying to break it down, what he just keeps making comments about, you know, you're a woman, go away. You know, no respect from anyone, no respect from the dance floor. Everybody laughing at her. People, you know, people hanging over the mezzanine level to laugh at her dancing. She's not allowed into meetings. And even if she was allowed into a meeting, who does she get to speak to? Bloody Lucas Mattson, yeah. You know? I just thought, you know, it was rock bottom, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was
Kendall's rock line, bottom. Can I get you anything? What was it? It was pussy coke wristwatches. It's just like as
it
if
was,
they were...
Was it? Did he say pussy cocaine and pasta? It's pussy pasta. What was the third P?
I could have
people
sworn
are
off...
listening to this and shouting whatever it is.
So I could have sworn he offered him wristwatches as well.
God, I literally...
Reese offers everyone a wristwatch.
Yeah, who's we now know is a bad person. You know, Ken was like, he's not a good man.
He's the walking dark web.
He's pivoted to doing cocaine and prostitutes as well.
Was it pussy prostitutes and... Oh, I love this. I love the fact that the three of us can't think of one decadent thing that starts with P. Porridge!
Porridge, no. Yeah. Pot noodle.
Yeah, it's like just a penguin.
His reason for being there is what now? Now that Logan's, you know, they're out of the water with the DOJ, Logan immediately decided that he wanted to go back to his season two kind of... Pierce purchase, which seems quite weird. Seems like, why would you do that when you've got, you know, that's old school.
Yeah,
I think that was part of Shiv's problem with it. So
yes.
Explain to me his role in it then, Lucas Matheson's role in this then. He's just got money, has he? That's it. It's
he owns this like tech streaming platform called Gojo. Is that right?
Right,
but
okay.
The last time he built something for them, it was so bad that it didn't load, and that's why he pissed on his phone.
No, the Waystar's app has really bad user interface, so everything lags and it takes ages to load.
Matheson is like Netflix and Waystar are like ITV Hub.
Yeah, Waystar's like BritBox, I think. And so I was looking into this afternoon, like, when, because sometimes the show does introduce a thing and you're like, how long has what's Gojo? And they actually first mentioned it when they were trying to woo Adrien Brody.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Kendall said, look, a comet is coming. We're going to do a big acquisition. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to broaden out. And he said, we're going to do Gojo. Adrien Brody said, it is way too overpriced. But Kendall said, they have great user interface and really bad content.
How do you remember this?
I went and looked at one of the scripts today.
Look at him.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you for that.
All right, so
thank you for your service.
Waystar has great content but a terrible design. Gojo has great design but terrible content. And so the idea is that they acquire it. And I guess it's a bit like Google Maps saying we're going to buy CityMapper and we're going to use that interface on our wider ranging but crap product. And so, yeah, that's how he's come into it. He didn't want them because he thought they were a load of dinosaurs. He only wants to work with them if Logan is not long for this world, which I thought fair play to Lucas for saying what we've all been thinking, which is, when is Logan going to die?
Chris, thank you so much for explaining that to me, because all of the time they were discussing those things in the party, all I could think was, the man has his feet on the table.
Yeah.
Because he had his trainers on the table. He was in the treehouse and he was looking at his phone. He doesn't make eye contact. He just looks at his phone most of the time when he's talking. I thought that the question that he asked Roman about Logan, when will he die? I thought that that was what, I mean, I'm not easily shocked and I'm certainly not with this program, but it was the relentless pursuing of it to Logan's son. And it wasn't as if, it wasn't like banter.
Roman's probably not had to really think about that out loud. And you could see him really caught off guard by that.
But Roman's always been the one throughout this season, which has kind of backed his dad. Like all the others have kind of like crumbled at some point. Whereas Roman has been the one, especially in the Piss Mad episode, he was the one that was just like, that's our dad.
And I think he only managed to the thing that got him to pursue Lucas at the treehouse and get the wristband to get through. The thing, he wanted to do it for his dad. And that's where Shiv just ended up having a gin and having a little boogie. It's that need to impress Logan. I don't think Roman quite knows if he agrees with the plan, but he knows that's what his dad wants. And I think that is such a different motivator between them.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more.
I absolutely love how Succession illustrates the different eras of wealth, the different types of wealth, the different ways that people have made their wealth and how they actually behave. Because, you know, these people that we've met who are the future, you know, who've made money from tech, who've made money from, you know, futuristic type of things, they're all, they're in no way nicer or less evil than Logan in his prime.
Yeah.
You know, even from the very first episode, who is the guy who in the very, very first episode, and he said, I'm going to be like a fox in the hay house, in the chicken house, and I'm going to kill everybody. I'm going to kill every single one of you. It was episode one.
He was the guy
that ran the, it was basically Vice.
Volta.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, so even from episode one, you've got the guy from Volta.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
These people, they don't make having made billions from sitting around on your sofa, you know, putting in the grind, as they say. These people do, you know, don't they do like 21-hour days sitting around in their pants for like 11 years and then they've suddenly got billions of pounds. Not one of them looks happy.
Yeah.
They have no social skills. They don't, no. You know, there was just something. I thought the character of Lucas was a real modern baddie, wasn't he? A real modern take on the evil of excess.
Well, the only thing that gave him any spark was the prospect of pissing on Roman's phone, which is just like such a weird thing, you know. But that's the only
so
time.
Degrading as well.
It's
I
the
think,
only thing. Like, it's the only time he was energized by.
Also, two for two episodes, Roman conducting homoerotic business deals in a toilet.
Yeah.
I mean,
so much so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by it. Also, I just want to say, as someone who appreciates a tall gentleman, I thought Alexander Skarsgård was wasted spending most of the episode sitting down. He is 6'6". And the bit where he was at least going for a wee, I was like, well, thank goodness he's tall and you can see it in all its glory. So I would say having someone with that bad posture who is that tall and Viking-esque was a waste.
Amazing.
But I hope he's in one of the next two episodes. It's kind of amazing how even people like Alexander Skarsgård, like, yeah, I'll do like an episode where I'm just like a douchebag and I have 10 lines. Yeah. Like, and the I can't remember the name of the director, but it's the director who did Hustlers.
Ah, great movie.
Laurie, what's she called? And she pitched to Jesse Armstrong. She was like, I want to, please let me direct an episode. Like,
Lauren Scafaria?
Yeah.
Wow. That's
how
cool.
Incredible
That's cool.
is that?
That is very cool. Right, we've put it off for long enough. After the break, we're going to go away for a few seconds. When we come back, that's like one half where we've just talked about just incidental stuff that happened. When we come back, it's time to crack open our invite and enter the treehouse. Okay, welcome back to the Boardroom, season 3, episode 7. It's my party, and I will get pushed over by my brother and leave in shame if I want to. Where on earth do you even begin with this?
I mean, can I first say that any party that I go to that has that immersive theatre type thing going on, I don't, you know, I quite liked...
Have you not been to You, Me, Poo Poo Train or whatever it's called?
Oh, that's it. We were talking about You, Me, Bum Bum Train.
That's it,
I mean, it's that. It's that type of immersive. It's Punch Drunk Theatre. That's another one, isn't it? Where you go in. I mean, I don't so much mind. I quite liked that. What, the compliment? The compliment.
That was amazing.
What was it called?
The compliment tunnel.
I kind of liked that as well. And I loved the juxtaposition of Tom going in a bit coked in, so people were like, you're a lovely person, fuck off. which was just brilliant. But it was just as they walked out of the vagina tunnel and there's these kind of glassy-eyed drama students dressed as nurses, I thought, oh god, because I've been at parties like this where you've suddenly I think I've been at a Game of Thrones party like that.
Do you know what? Like, yeah, there have been a few underneath the Tower of London, haven't there? Season 4 or 5. They're in the dungeons, weren't they?
Season 4. Yeah, I remember going to that.
But this was, you know, there was a certain type of party where they have that type of budget. It's a massive undertaking to do these types of parties.
It was such a perfectly pitched party for him. You know, the writers really get Kendall, don't they? They really know what he would do. Even that awful kind of like forest green roll neck with the
what did he have on?
Yeah.
He didn't even get changed for his party. He was wearing that all day and then just put the jacket over the top, like with the UFO on the back, which is obviously, if there's anyone that is a billionaire or so knows that, is obviously probably some really expensive, hard to get, kind of like billionaires boys club kind of like thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought something like that.
It was his end of times, wasn't it? Was that like the theme of it? End of
days? It was his light. It was like, because it started going through his mum's vaginal canal and there was a nursery with baby cocktails in baby bottles. And then they went through to the childhood treehouse, which was obviously like Ken could control who came in and out. I was like, God, get Freud on the phone.
Oh, yeah. Tragic,
but then the one thing I'd also noticed was that the room that was on fire, you know, with all the screens, that was designed to look like the Waystar offices, which I thought was, and it was just the most horrifying look into his psyche.
Yeah.
That's how he wants to celebrate his 40th birthday, is by sort of like making everyone like live his life.
Live his horrors, wasn't it? Because none of them were very happy rooms either. There was no kind of like joyful thing.
And there was none of his actual, you know, none of the regular faces that we would expect to have even showed face were there.
No and one came, did they?
Nobody came to it.
There were no A-listers. And the beginning, was it, Lord, how many are coming? It was like, 80%?
80%, yes, yeah. And he said Elon Musk was going, which I thought was hilarious.
that's a real burn to Elon Musk, isn't it? Yeah.
If I was a famous person and I was one of those names, I would be mortified.
But yeah, you're right, Grace. It was every room was just a little bit too empty.
Yes. It was one of those parties that you go to where from the moment you get there, you know that you're going to have trouble leaving because to be walking the other way out of the door. We've all done it in parties where you realise that you're not going to be able to get out of the door and get your goodie bag or whatever if they're giving them out with, because there's still people arriving, but it's too late and you can't, oh God, it's just, it was, I'm so glad that it didn't work towards a repetition of him getting up to sing and the song going wrong. And I'm so glad that we didn't have to sit through him being crucified on a cross or any of these things. Because by
you
that
say
point,
that, but I am quite angry that I didn't get my tiny Wu-Tang.
Tiny Wu-Tang to me was very Spinal Tap, Stonehenge, wasn't it?
So what was Tiny Wu-Tang going to be? In my mind, it was dwarfs doing Wu-Tang Clan. Mm.
Yeah, or children. Neither of these things are great. It's either children running around swearing or it's small people.
If there is not a troop of dwarves now, kind of like rehearsing Gravel Pit, there is something wrong in the world because they will clean up.
But, you know, it's interesting, the idea of a determination to throw a party despite knowing
everything.
you're not popular, you're an incredibly, you know, a very dodgy part of your life, like your career. You've got these court cases and all these things coming up. This bloody mindedness that he was going to have the party said a lot about him. It's like it's the biggest sign of a kind of a, not an insanity, but, you know, not incongruency in what's going on in his head. When he said it to Adrian Brody, I can't remember Adrian's name in the thing, when he said something like, "Are you coming to my party?" And Adrian Brody just looked him in the face and went, "Why, who's coming?"
Yeah.
Which I thought was so, at that moment, I'd have called it off.
Yeah. Like, but I think what was interesting with Kendall, this was his episode where time ran out, really, where he'd been kidding himself for so long, whether it was about the court case, whether it was about the letters, whether it was about his relationship with his family or about his own popularity and his own standing in things. Because up until this episode, he genuinely thought he was the good guy and that he would eventually end up back in the fold and they would have seen that he was right all along. And how can we resolve this, please, Kendall? And this was the episode where everything just ran out and he realized that he didn't have any friends, that he couldn't even buy himself an amazing party. You know, that was when he was most crestfallen, was when he realized that actually the party was just shit. And if anyone's a big fan of reading about Succession, I'm sure everybody is, Alan Sepinwall, who's a brilliant, fantastic writer about all things TV, writes for the Rolling Stones, and he made a really good point, was that when Kendall just said, "I want to go home," he said that it was almost like that was the first time he can remember anyone in Succession saying anything honest or just genuinely from the heart. And it really did. It really cut to the quick. He just turned around and he was
Where
just like,
do you think he meant by home?
Ooh.
When he said, "I want to go home," in my head, I thought he wants to be at Rava's with the kids and he just wants to be home.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mean literally, but almost, you know that he's, "I want to be that Kendall. I want to," or because I don't ever see the children Shiv and Roman, they don't seem to have a place that they call home. So when he says, "I want to go home," I didn't think he meant with his family, you know, where they're all going to sit around a fire. And I didn't think there was, but to me, home, I got the sense that's where he went when he was having in the first few episodes. He went straight there because that's where he still sees this as being kind of a, and I love the fact that every time he does try to go back there, Rava's like, "Why are you here?"
Yeah.
I kind of thought he was sort of, I was getting like, "I want my mum" kind of energy from his, at the end of his breakdown. And I, you know, I think he just wants to go back in the womb and
there is no home. He has no home.
No, because they all have so many properties that there's no sort of like sentimentality to any of the spaces like that they occupy. You know, there's nothing personalized there. It's all just lavish. But I thought the kind of way that Logan sort of ditched him, his family clearly were like, look, we're actually only here to try and steal an investor from you. And then finally his kids gave him a present and it was kind of like Rosebud, wasn't it? Where he was like, tethered to them. And he was like, I've got all this crap in my present room and I can't find the one thing I need. And that seems to be what really like did it for him, that he's got nobody. And I do think he's thought for, to your point, Jamie, like he's thought for the longest time, like I am doing this for the people in my life and they'll come back around.
Yeah.
But I think Logan sort of saying to him, I want to buy you out. This is how much you are worth to me on paper. That even obviously if my dad said to me, Chris, here's 2 billion, I'd be like, I love you. But I think it must be quite strange for someone to whom money means nothing to be told that you are just a number. Like,
yeah.
When Naomi, when we saw a side to Naomi in this episode that we'd never really seen, we saw a lot of her.
Yeah.
And we saw that she did have a caring and a patient and a sympathetic side and a motherly side and a loving side,
yeah,
and a side that went to try and find a gift, although she has no value of money also in her own head. She went out to try and find a gift. But, you know, there's that closing scene. It lingered on her for a very long time, didn't it? Where she just kind of looked almost at the door, didn't she? She just almost was cuddling him. But to me, it felt as if she was going, how the hell do I get out of this one?
Yeah.
I'm just going to have to walk away, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting that in this episode, suddenly the Pierces are back, aren't they?
But do you think she's good for him? Because I remember we were like, she's something about her is a bit like...
that was the drugs, I think.
Lechy.
Yeah.
And now I'm sort of like, okay, she might not be good for him, but I don't think she's bad for him.
Yeah, I thought she was. I thought I, you know, I watched that and I just thought, oh, thank God he's got her, because she was being really sweet and you know, even if she, I mean, my God, if anyone rich wants to buy me a shit watch, just feel free, because there's a lot of shit watches being dished out as kind of last thought gifts.
My feeling with her is that she doesn't bring out the best in him. You know, she doesn't try and encourage him to be a better person.
She was stood at the side of the stage when he was rehearsing the Billy Joel thing at the beginning and told him it was amazing. So she does not have his best interests at heart, clearly, because that was...
Well, she's from a very similar background. I mean, I know her side of the clan are a little bit more touchy-feely. You know, the plot of Succession made a big point of saying, you know, everything that they do is a bit different. The Pierces, they treat their staff well, and they have home cooked meals where they all sit together and like talk about Shakespeare around an open fire and blah blah blah. At the end of the day, though, it's same, isn't it? You know, it's like when we knew that from the moment she didn't give a damn about that wine being opened, when Greg opened the wine at Rava's and Rava's going, oh, and Naomi just kind of came in with the glasses and went, oh God, let's get it drunk. And I think that said so much about Naomi.
Yeah.
I did love that Rava's appearance where she was like, I'm spending my birthday with 3 of my gal pals. We're going to have a bottle of wine. And Ken was like, that sounds awful. I was like, that sounds great.
Yeah.
that's what I'd like to do for my birthday.
Yeah. And she's also catching a dick as well. So fair play to her.
Yeah. That was her new guy, right?
Kendall said, oh, there's your guy. Does he even have genitals? And she was just like, oh yes. The ending was just horrible. You know, it accumulated into just one of the nastiest, bitterest, horriblest kind of conversations between the three kids that has ever, like, it kind of made the whole past kind of like 28, 27 episodes pale, because it was just everything was out, wasn't it? It was just kind of like no holds barred. There was no pretending. Shiv got it. Roman got it. And then last of all, Kendall really got it.
We've gone on this journey with all the children especially with Roman, for example, what he's had to do to prove to Logan that he isn't a joke. He isn't a car crash. He is the new him. And we've seen Roman get ever so slightly in tiny incremental stages, nastier and more cutthroat until last episode. He's kind of in a strange, erotic standoff with a Nazi in the toilet and you don't know whether he's going to, I was going to say suck him off. I can say that with you two. And I don't know what he's going to do. And then we've now come to this episode and I just thought Roman is, it was quite chilling, wasn't it? There was something incredibly upsetting about the way that he was behaving. You know, he's not...
I do think a lesser show would have had a physical fight. Like they would have gone, the only way we can show this is if them like smashing a table or something. But it was something even more, it was such a half-hearted push and such a full-throttled fall over. And it was all just, you know, I felt really uncomfortable witnessing it.
Yes.
It was, that it did push. Feel like a school where you watch someone get bullied.
There's no remorse from Roman. And I think we touched on this earlier where like we started to fall out of love with him because he's actually I think Ken said to him like you're not real, like you're not a person, because he's just this kind of conduit for other people, whether it's these fascist politicians or this really like shifty tech guy that we met with Alexander Skarsgård or Logan, who's telling, you know, Roman like I'm not going to go, but you go and deliver this. And you go and we're going to spy. We haven't even touched on this yet, that they're sort of spying on Kendall's kids, yeah. Which is what Rava said to him, like these goons keep following the nanny, like you need to call them off. And he's like, you know, this suddenly it starts where, to that get
was
rude.
Where, and that was where Shiv was just like, wait, we're what? And
you we're know, what? Exactly. Shiv, what?
And that was another example of Shiv just being completely out of the conversation. So, you know, Roman and Logan had concocted the price. They'd come up with a number for Kendall. Roman knew what was in the card for him.
Yeah.
You know, and took great relish in telling Shiv that she wasn't even included. She never would be. And then also Shiv found out that she had no idea that they were sending kind of like security agents to spy on Kendall's kids. All of a sudden she was just like, oh shit, I'm the lefty one here. This is awful.
Yeah.
And she sold her soul to align with these people and she's not even getting to steer anything. No, she's just complicit without doing anything, which is like the worst scenario.
All she's ended up with is the fact that she's now got a husband that's not going to jail, that she wanted to go to jail. So she's
leapfrogged her as well. But I thought that, yeah, the fight was just grim. And like, there was, I know it can happen often in this show that you do think, oh, this is the point where it's there's no going back. But yeah, Roman has suddenly come on top, but there's something so unsettling about that. And I feel for Shiv and I feel for Kendall.
It always felt before like it was just business. Even like the first episode of season 3 after season 2, you know, the big kind of press conference with Roman, he was still able to phone Shiv and with Kendall rather. He was still able to phone Shiv and Roman up instantaneously and go, hey, Shivy, 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 you know, and that kind of thing, because it was all just business and it was kind of games and it was just posturing and maneuvering for succession. Whereas now actually it just feels like, yeah, you're right, Chris, it's just over. What are our predictions now then? What do we think is going to happen? Grace, have you changed on the last scene?
I still feel that they are going to come to their senses and realize that they're stronger as a unit, and all Kendall wants to be is, as we say, home. And there, even though this is a fictitious imaginary home, they're stronger as a unit and they know it.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear Grace say that, because by the time I finished this episode, I was like, I think the only way for Kendall to go is back to his dad, and I think there'll be some sort of, maybe not a reconciliation, but I think he'll go back. This whole plight that he's been on hasn't worked. He's alienated everybody and it's just built on wet sand. And I think he's going to come back in the fold, but with some kind of, you know, Logan is like a mafia boss. There's going to be some sacrifice. Maybe I don't know. I think there's got to be something like that. I also think Shiv is going to either get the boot or jump out. I think she's going to like leave, because I keep getting the sense that her downward spiral this season is very similar to Kendall's last season. Like it's just beating after beating after beating, in the sense that she's constantly failing, constantly being chastised by everybody. And yeah, I think there's got to be something like that. I also just think this Skarsgård thing, Alexander Skarsgård, is in the next episode.
Have you watched the trailer?
I haven't seen the trailer yet, but he is credited. I know he's guest starring in it.
Okay. Great. So maybe we'll
obviously Connor for president.
With his jacket on. Was there some kind of
lesbian?
His broken arm. Did I read that right? Was there some kind of like undercurrent of some Leslie Ash style sex games?
In the show, he said he fell off a horse. But apparently,
I don't think he's had sex with Willa for a long time. I really don't. I think Willa has got very used to the lifestyle, and she probably puts out once every 3 months.
She stepped up though, didn't she? At the end, she stuck up for him. You know, show some respect. He loved that.
Oh my God!
She just bought herself another play. Yeah.
Also, I loved when she went in to the party and she was like, "Oh, it's like a live theatre installment. Why didn't they consult me on this?" I was like, that is just absolutely like...
Oh, dear.
We'll always have sans, guys. Yeah. We'll always have sans.
But I also thought the way she was really rude to Comfrey, the publicist, about the coat thing. I was like, oh, she's actually kind of enjoying being in this proximity to him. And like, she's got used to that power where she said, he has got 1% of the vote. Like, show him some respect.
Yeah.
Favorite moments of this episode? There are too many. I mean, my favorite line, I think, was that from Alexander Skarsgård, where he just said, "Even the look on my face is commercially sensitive." I thought that was just great.
I mean, my favorite part was that entire scene with him sitting with his feet on the table, saying that we'll never know now. What was it? We don't know what the third P is.
No.
Yeah. My favourite quote of the night was also Connor when he was arguing about leaving his coat, and he said, "I'm still looking for my Norwegian wool coat I left in Vermont."
We've all got one of those though, haven't we? Except for me, it's probably just like a cardigan I left in a nightclub in Carlisle. But yeah, we've all got one.
We've not really even had time to touch on it. We won't have time either. Just to touch upon, it was kind of like an homage to knackered assistants as well. There was the Kendall's poor lackeys who just had enough. They were so relieved that he didn't do his kind of crucifix turn. But then also were panicking. They were trying to get Springsteen to come down.
Springsteen needs to come down. And what does it improve the vibe?
Yeah, improve the vibe. There was talk of a jetpack. It was just like...
And then Comfrey has to go back to a flat which is entirely full of lunchboxes.
He-Man lunchboxes. She
has to sell them on eBay and show them the receipts to get her money back.
That's what I mean. But it's so on the money as well. Anyone in PR, anyone in entertainment PR will know that. And I've got a house full of shit that they've posted me over the years.
Yes.
You know, I tell you what, there was someone a couple of weeks ago had to pour slime into a jar and stick a Ghostbuster sticker on the front of it and send it out to 50 people like me. And
are you sure it was slime?
I applaud you. It clogged at my sink. It better have been. They said it was water soluble. They lied. I'm aware that this is the world's smallest violin, and I'm not exactly endearing myself to my audience. But what annoys me most, and I get, you know, I'm sure, we're amongst friends, we can talk here. We get sent a lot of stuff, like a lot of stuff, especially when if you do anything with film and TV and stuff. Mm. I get sent like some amazing, amazing things, and this is just like an anonymous call out. Don't put stickers on it. Don't embroider it with the film. Because the leather jacket was perfect without having Fantastic Mr. Fox across the back, you know, or something.
I just thought that was like your sex name or something. I thought that's why you were wearing it.
Mr. Fox.
We were all like, he was really nice until he wanted us to call him Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yeah, got it.
I think if they send that, they should send you a little unpicker so that you could stay up all night. Doesn't getting work. The hashtag off the back of your jacket.
Did I leave my Nest cam on? Did you see me rubbing a Netflix logo off a backpack last night with nail varnish remover for my kid's school? My God, we're just waffling and talking about good shit we've been saying. Is it Tuscan Villa next week, or is that the finale?
I think it's a two-parter.
Ooh, good. Good. Grace, are you gracing us with your presence next week, or are you going to do a Jerry and just pop in and say hi and then fuck off?
I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Yes, perfect. Nice. Lovely. Thank you so much for listening. Do get in touch with us at @Chris_Mandel, at Grace Dent, at Jamie East, or at Previous Pod. Let us know what you're thinking. See ya.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.